I'm going to talk in English, and if anybody finds it impossible to understand, could they sit next to Shlomtzion, who will translate? Shlomtzion, where are you? Okay, so, but I'll make it easy English, if I can. This morning, Simi, in the instruction, was talking about the how of meditation, and she wisely left the why and said, everybody has a different why. And it certainly came up in the group today. Why do this? Why do we meditate? And when I ask myself that question, it's really difficult to answer. It's like saying to me, why live? Why think? Why breathe? Or my cat, why do you purr when someone strokes you? And the cat says, well, when I'm stroked, I just purr. So it's that kind of question. But it's very important to ask it. So I'll just try and make some comments. And especially because we're sitting here, many of us, for the first time, meeting this strange activity of sitting with our back hurting and our mind turning round and asking the question, why am I doing this, actually? Why am I putting myself through this? I want to give an example or a story. 2 weeks ago, there was a weekend retreat for cancer patients. And at the beginning we had a kind of a circle, and we asked everybody to just express some of the things they were going through right now. And a lot of questions came up. Uncertainties, confusions, like, how can I be a friend to my cancer when I want to get rid of it? How can I fight my disease and yet accept my life and accept myself? Where is all this going, and why me? And why did this happen? And questions like this, and you realize that those are our questions. They're not just their questions or this group. They are our questions. Why me? Why am I doing these things? Why is it difficult? Why is life a struggle? Why is life up 1 minute and down the next minute? It's us. And basically what happens in our life is that we're born and we build our personality, our life, our experience, our joys, our pains, our disappointments, our hopes, our desires, our anger, our freedom, and our feeling of being in a prison. And as we grow and experience, we find that all our history is kind of there with us all the time. All our history, all our biography is right here, is right with us. We are it. It is us. It is what made us. We are made of it. This world of experience that we're growing up through. all the things that happen to us, all the things people have said to us, all the definitions we have of ourselves and of the world, they're all collected together here right now. And that's who we are. And it's a bit like we're born and we kind of build ourselves a house to live in. And brick by brick and stone by stone, we build ourselves a house that we want. It's ours. It's a house to live in. It's a house that we know. We know it. It's us. It's our familiar place. We're building ourselves a comfortable place as we want it, as we want to be. And there is a little whisper behind there. When we've built the house and we look around from inside it and say, wow, I'm inside. I've built myself a kind of prison. Look, I'm in the walls. Well, what's happening outside? It's something that we may feel more or we may feel less. But I think most of us have a sense that we've built ourselves something very, very closed. We constructed ourselves, and we are in this construction. In this mivne, in this construction. We built ourselves and we're in it. There's a beautiful quote from Hamlet, a one-line quote about the king. He says, the king put his head inside the shell of a nut and thought that he was king of infinite space. He put his head inside a nutshell and thought he was king of infinite space. And a little bit, that's us. We are inside ourselves, and sometimes we think we're free and we don't notice the wall until something happens. So then we begin to ask ourselves, how do I really solve my problems? How do I regain some essential freedom that I really feel from somewhere inside me, but I don't quite know how to catch it, how to be it, how to live it? How do I really break out? What tools do I have to solve my problems? And bearing in mind the story of the cancer patient, which is our story too. How do I solve the struggles of life? Why are they there? How do I relate to them? And Einstein said that you can't solve problems with the same mind that created them. So we're inside the castle or the building that we've created, and we want to solve the problems that are created by the building itself. And we find that we can't go outside and look at them from the outside. So there are many images in the Eastern tradition that actually express this basic puzzle. How can we solve the problems of life when we are built out of them? When what we've constructed for ourselves is the problem. So we are constructed, in a sense, by the problem. And so this is a problem to be solved in a new way. And the tradition has many images, like, you can't bite your own teeth. You can't see your own eyes. You can't make straight something with a bent ruler. If a ruler is bent, or if the tools are crooked, you can't make something straight with crooked tools. These are kind of images that express some fundamental paradox That is, when we look at our problems with the same mind that created them, we are stuck. We are confronted and we are confused. So somehow or other, we have to get out of this house. We have to look at it from the outside. And we may not be courageous enough to do what the Buddha did, which is after the castle was built, he just left it. And he went out. And he searched. The castle was his comfort, his safety, his joy, but it was still a castle. And it was still had walls. And he had the courage to step out of it. In some way, meditation is just that. It is another way of stepping out of the castle. It's a radical way of looking again at where we really are. And the first thing to do is just to stop. Because one of the things that happens to us as we keep building this castle and building and building and building is we're in the habit of doing and running in the same way we always have been. We are compelled, we are propelled, pushed by the energy of habit. And we may not be able to stop the habits and turn around and undo everything, but we can stop. And so the first thing that we need to do is not actually try and solve the problem with the same mind. Not to try and keep going with the trying to solve our life problems and trying to work it out more and more and more and more. We can do that. And that is important. It doesn't mean to say we should just be, you know, give up, you're in it, you're dying, say, oh, I don't know anything. No, we can look with the wisdom that we have at our situation. But there's another way, which is firstly to stop. And stopping means stopping physically, stopping psychologically. It means just not building anymore. I won't put more stones. I'm just stopping. And that's the first step. It's a step in a way of refusal to be part of the big game that keeps rolling on. Like, no, there's some other way. I'm not going to keep going with it in this way. And we may find it difficult to stop, but that's only because we have this kind of engine that keeps driving us on and on and on. And many of us expressed it today. How? Okay, I sit, but my mind is racing just like it is all the time. Or, I'm restless, I can't relax, I don't know how to, is this what I'm supposed to do? We may find it difficult to stop at first, but that's just because of the habit. And the image I used today in one of the groups, I saw in the Galil there was a road that was quite steep, and there was a big sign saying, this is a place of sand, and if a car has no brakes going down the hill, it can go off there and run into the sand. So like our meditation for us is a place with sand, that we're running kind of without control. We can't stop the mind from racing, we can't stop the restlessness, we feel awkward, we can't sit, but we can slowly run into the ground, run into the sand, let the sand stop us. And it takes time, and we need compassion to ourselves and to know that we are being pushed along by habit energy, but we can stop. Bit by bit, we can stop. We can slow down, and we can stop. Need a bit of patience, because the habit energy is rolling. It's rolling, rolling, rolling. And when we stop, we have an opportunity to see, to look at ourselves as we are, just to see. Many of you say, when I sit, I'm full of thoughts. My thoughts keep racing and racing and racing. But in our ordinary life, when we're not stopping, we don't even know that we're thinking. We don't even know these thoughts. So the very fact that we stopped, just even that allows us to see how much we're running. Allows us to see that the thoughts are racing. We wouldn't know it otherwise. So it's already something. We already actually did stop. And we looked and we saw that our mind is running and this is running and this is changing and this is hurting and this, my body is restless and I'm tired and tiredness is coming and then energy is coming and then it isn't. Okay, fair enough. That's what happens when we stop. We see all the things that are still buzzing and turning and driving us. It's okay. And the second thing that we do after stopping is beginning to use our attention. Tsumat lev, our awareness. We're beginning to learn to use our awareness, our attention, in a rather different way. Usually, normally, we are using our attention to keep building this building. We're using our attention to act, to do, to survive, to cope with life, to function, to function in life, to get on, to do what we need to do, to struggle. Our attention is in use. It's kind of engaged. When we stop and begin to attend to what we see when we stop, that is, to the life as it is, at that moment, we find things look a bit different. Firstly, the attention is not tied in to functioning. It's not tied in. It's not engaged totally to getting on in life. The attention is disconnected a bit from the running. And the attention is there. We are awake. We can do. We can see. We can feel. We can listen. So it's there. But we begin to be able to use this attention to see ourselves, gova einayim, should we say, right as we are when we stop. And when we do that, some very interesting things happen. Firstly, we become less scattered. In normal life, all the forces are scattering us and scattering our energy and scattering our attention. Now we need this. Now we need that. Now we need telephone. Now we need the television. Every second, the television itself. No stopping. It's like it only gives us half a second of one thing and then it moves to the next. Our attention, when it's engaged in all the stimulation, giruim, is all the time is scattered. And then we ourselves feel scattered. We feel spread. We feel disconnected. We don't know who we are. We don't know where we are. We're all the time there and there and there and there and there and there. And it's not clear where we are. We have no real sense of being at home. So the first thing that happens when we apply our attention to the life as it appears to us, even if it's difficult, even if it's boredom and tiredness and pain in the back, doesn't matter. We stop and we're applying our attention to where we are. And it begins to draw back our awareness back inside ourselves. It pulls it back to one place, here. And that's a very important action. And it creates in us a quality of steadiness. A kind of inner spine or inner anchor or inner steadiness from which we can relate to life. it kind of creates another body, a psychological body, which is more present, more solid. It's here. It's quieter. So that's one aspect. And another aspect to do with using our attention when we're stopped is we find we're no longer feeding the old habits of construction. We don't feed them anymore. If you think of now a habit that you find difficult, each of us has many, something that we find difficult, you'll find that it's built in us by the energy of being repeating itself, keeping going. Every message brings another message. For example, if we're down on ourselves, we feel criticism of ourselves. If we look at that, it's a habit. It's something that feeds itself. The more we think about it, the more it appears. The more we think about it, the more it appears. The messages keep going around, and the result is that we look at ourselves in a certain way. This sense of putting our attention somewhere else actually stops feeding. It stops feeding other messages that otherwise we'd be busy with all the time. Messages, for example, of criticism, messages of control, messages of disappointment, messages, all kinds of messages. One of the messages that in the tradition, one of the messages is, we're not the Buddha. It's a message. It's a label. Or, we're not free. It's a label, it's a message. Or, I have lots of problems. Or, I have a disease. It's a message. And it keeps going. And the message has its babies and sons and daughters of messages. They breed, the messages breed other messages. There's a kind of a whole proliferation going on. So we don't feed those messages. We don't need to feed them. Part of the stopping is finding a place that's no longer, we don't need to keep giving ourselves these labels, these messages, these kind of comments on ourselves. So gradually, the attention itself gradually makes some space. And it's a kind of clean space. We're attending to breath, body, phenomena as they happen. There's something very clean about that. There's something very pure. It's just the life as it appears in this minute. That is the reality for me right now. It's something very clean. It doesn't ask you for keeping going. There's a sense of resting. A sense that, okay, I can rest in this. This is what's happening. I can rest in this place. Like today is Shabbat. So there is this concept in the Yadut of the Neshama Yetera, the extra soul, that very much is linked with stopping. It's an interesting concept. Resting and stopping creates an extra soul in the Jewish context. And I think that's what it means. It's a sense of stopping and resting, allowing something purer to emerge. Because we just stop constructing all the time. Constructing ourselves, constructing our duties, our jobs, our way we want to see ourselves, our desires, our needs. In the weekend that we had with the cancer patient, I think there wasn't a lot of meditation. We worked quite a lot with dialogue, quite a lot with feeling. We did work with meditation as well. And at the end of the weekend, there really was a noticeable sense of joy. There was a noticeable sense of, yeah, I can be friends with myself, and therefore friends with my cancer. And I'm sure that it was one aspect of this, one contribution of this, was the fact that at the moment, in the quietness, when the participants were sitting and being with their breath and body and being with the light inside them, there was no cancer. There essentially was just me and the light inside me. And that place is joyful. And that place is a place of renewal. And that place is a simple place where problems don't essentially exist. We may see difficulties, but it's a place of purity. What is happening, what is coming out, what is truthfully emerging is just the life at this minute. There's something very clean about that. And if we are connected with that simple moment-by-moment feeling, there is joy. That is the joy. That's the joy that we forgot when we're busy building our life. It's not exactly the same as happiness. Happiness and sadness will come anyway. But there's something in there like joy of being just connected with a moment-by-moment life. In this practice, we are encouraged to use the breath as a starting point. And I should say that there's nothing sacred about the breath. There's nothing that says the breath is the only thing that we need to connect with in order to be free. But the breath is a convenient gateway, and it tells us that sometimes this stopping that I talked about, this sense of meeting life as it comes, it's not so easy to make the transition. It needs us to go through some kind of passageway. If we say what I'm saying now to somebody out in the street who never imagined meditation, he would look at me as if I'm crazy. We sometimes need a tool or a help, and sometimes not. But the breath for us is quite a good handle or a place where we can actually begin to experience this sense of stopping and allowing quiet space, allowing the stopping of our construction work. The breath is a convenient place. Nothing sacred about it, but it does work. But it's not the only thing, and in this retreat we're doing many other things besides the breath. Already, in one day, we've experienced many other things. We experienced walking, we've experienced touching the ground, we've experienced feeling the space around us, we've experienced a sense of working a little bit with difficulty. We've experienced many other things besides the breath, but the breath for us is a good way in. It's a kind of a gate. In the tradition, there's thousands and thousands of different gates into this quiet space. And the breath is one of them, and I think a very good one for us. But basically, the breath is a place where our senses become connected to our life. And that's the reason why the breath, it's a place bringing us inside. It helps us not to be outside all the time, with specifics, with this, with that, with the things, with the interactions, with this, I want that, and this, I need that, and this, I don't need that. The outside. It takes us in. It's in a way our gateway into a big mess, as many of us experience. It's all right. The main thing is that we're traveling, we pass through the gate, we open the gate, we do have a gate to open. And the mess is only just the fact that it's our history. That's all. It's us, and we are a mess. After all this conditioning, that's how we arrive in this place. But it tells us there's another place to be. It's a hint that there's another place to be. But there's a lot more. This is one aspect, why we meditate. But there's a lot more. Going further, we can see, we can experience, or we can understand, using our attention through the breath and through other avenues, through the senses, is not only a way to find a quiet place to stop, which is a place, in a way, to renew ourselves. It's also a training. And in the tradition, the mind is seen as like a wild elephant with a tremendous power and a tremendous energy and totally out of control. And like a wild elephant that will come and smash everything and break down a house and trample on the crops and pull down trees, it also can, it can be, it, this energy can be used, it can be a power for us. And part of the work we're doing is training this wild elephant of our own mind, our own awareness, to begin to serve us, instead of being so chaotic that we don't know where we are with it. And in some way or other, the first part, the stopping, which we might call samatha, or we might call a kind of slowing down, or becoming aware, becoming centered, in some way or other, it's also the beginning of a process. And as we move on, we begin not only to stop and see the castle we've built, we begin to open things, we begin to know, we begin to understand what it is we've built here. And that's the second part, and we can maybe look at that and call it vipassana. It doesn't really matter. But we need to stop first, and then to open our eyes and see what we see. And so in some way or other, they're two connected things. In the tradition, the vipassana is likened to a sword. It's likened to a sword that cuts through. And there is here the sword of insight. Vipassana is insight, tovana, seeing through. So when we begin to, first of all, settle into our breath, to settle into our awareness, to settle into our life, to find a tool to use, we can then begin to look and see what it is that we've built. What is this building, this construction that we've been building all these years of our life? How does it look? What are these patterns that keep repeating themselves again and again in my life? What are the messages that keep going round and round? What are they made of? How are they? How do the messages control me? What is going on? And here is a path of purification. Here is a path of somehow nikui, some kind of cleaning, some kind of emerging, learning to emerge from this prison, It's a sense of looking around, seeing what it is. Where are we? Where am I? Where am I actually standing in the middle of all of this life of mine? And then, when we look at our problems from that perspective, from the perspective of insight, not from the perspective of trying to solve them with the same mind, but looking them at them from the perspective of using the sword of insight, it's a totally different place. There we find, for example, that our problems are not solved. They are dissolved. The problems are not solved. They're not solvable from the inside, because they're us. But they are dissolved. We can dissolve them. We can accommodate them. We could suddenly see that the walls of this castle are not so solid as we first thought. When we look at them, we see that we've built. Wait a minute. There are holes. There's light. They're not so solid. I assumed all this time in my ignorance that they're real solid chumah. Suddenly I find they're not. When we look at our inner life, we look at our patterns, our messages, our tendencies, our personality, what we like about ourselves, what we don't like about ourselves, the whole mess, we can, with the sword of vipassana, sword of insight, sword of attention, we can begin lefarek, take it to pieces, to see these things are not so solid as we thought. They're solid only because they keep going in the unconscious mind, these messages, this thing, this life that looks so tight, and like, I am this, and I am a cancer patient, and I am not the Buddha, and I am struggling, and life is hard, life sucks, and I don't know why I'm here. We look at all the messages, and they can dissolve, they can become just messages. We see them just as messages. And that's a great freedom. Things become very, very dynamic. Krishnamurti said once that attention is a fire that burns away our suffering. It's a very mysterious sentence. From one side, it's a very mysterious sentence. What does he mean? Attention is a fire that burns away our suffering. What does he mean? What he means is that with the training of using our awareness, with the sense of giving our awareness power, giving it power, not just letting it be sold into the necessities of life, we sell our awareness to what we need next, and what next, we sell it to buy this and that in our life. But instead of selling our awareness, we hold it, and we begin to use it, and we increase it, and we develop it, and we train it. And then when we apply that awareness to things, they begin to melt. They begin to lefarek. We begin to open things. And that's what he means, burning. It's like awareness is a light. It burns through. It cuts through. It sees through. Because the solidity is an illusion. It's an illusion. The pain in the knees, or the shoulder, or the tension in the body. Turn the mind to it. Penetrate inside it, and it's no longer suffering. It's life that's telling us things, that's expressing something, that we can make it less, we can make it stronger, we can feel it stronger, we can feel it less, we can ignore it, or we can invite it. Fully alive. What we thought was a problem, pain, tension in the shoulder, becomes a living experience, which is no longer suffering. It's pain, But it's not the same suffering anymore. We melted it. It's melted. It's softened. It's come alive. It's a dynamic. Like all of life. That's what I mean. Attention is a fire. It burns away the fixed things that hold us, that tie us down. The act of attention that is needed is the act of keeping it going, is of sustaining the attention. And that's why some of you here, in a way, feel a difficulty. Because for the attention to really melt our issues, it needs to be sustained. It needs to be held. If I pay attention to something, like for a moment here, and a moment there, and a moment there, and a moment there, and a moment there, that's just the normal meeting of crazy life in the middle of New York. The minute I hold the attention on something, on the pain in the shoulder, I hold it, I penetrate into it. It takes time, it takes patience, it takes intention. It needs to be sustained, and that's the fire. You need to hold it. So we're not used to sustaining our attention. We're not used to it. And because of that, when we have three breaths and then we leave it and then we say, didn't really work for me. I'm only three breaths time to sustain my attention on one thing and then my mind is off again. It doesn't work. It does work, but we just need to give it time and space. We need to go through a process. We need to sit day after day. It's because we've been all our life using our attention in another way. We've been all our life selling our attention, our awareness, to the needs of life. We've been selling it all our life. So to actually draw it back and hold it in one place is not easy. It's not going to happen in 5 minutes. And so we need patience, we need training, we need attention, we need to keep intention, we need to keep on with it. But I think that the first thing that I said, the first element of the, in a way, the joy of life that arrives when we just are with that process, we're just with the simplicity, the cleanliness, clean awareness, that gives us the support on the way. So it's not all hard work and training. Actually, it's a win-win situation. As we're training, we're also getting some payment back in terms of the joy of just being simple. It's the purity of just being, stepping outside, standing under the tree. We're training ourselves, but we're also having benefit in the moment, from this particular moment. And finally, for many of us, the reason we meditate is beyond all of these things and is in the spiritual dimension and is not just the stopping and is not just the training and is not just the cleaning out of things and it's not just the breaking down of walls. It's all of those things, but there is one more dimension, which is the spiritual dimension. And for many of us, that is the reason that we practice. And this is much more, when we say, why meditate? This is a dimension which is much more to do with the quest for meaning and the quest for deep answers and realizations. And it isn't that this spiritual element or aspect, it's somewhere else. It's not somewhere else. It's in the same things I've been talking about, but just somewhere deeper. It's as if we see the walls we built. We not only want to kind of dissect, melt these walls, dissolve the walls, but we also want to see the light outside. We want to know what's out there. What's really, when the walls dissolve, what's really out there? What's really the garden that we can see into? And there's a beautiful quotation from Krishnamurti that I really I really find him one of my teachers in life. And he writes a lot in his journal just about the way he sees outside these walls. When you look outside the walls, what do you see? And he doesn't write about ultimate things. He doesn't write about ultimacy. And in fact, whenever you hear great sages, Thich Nhat Hanh, the Buddha himself, Krishnamurti, when you hear them talk about the reason that I'm the spiritual vision, it's never in big language. It's always about the sunrise, the mountain, the sound of a bird. But just you know that it's seen in a completely different way. When we see things outside the walls, they're the same thing. It's not that they're totally different, but they're just seen in a radically different way. So I want to read a piece by Krishnamurti that just describes this very well. And with that I'm going to close. In the silence of deep night, and in the quiet, still morning, when the sun is touching the hills, there is a great mystery. It is there in all living things. If you sit quietly under a tree, you would feel the ancient earth with its incomprehensible mystery. Cannot understand it, mystery. On a still night, when the stars are clear and close, you would be aware of expanding space and the mysterious order of all things, of the movement of the dark hills and of the sound of an owl. In that utter silence of the mind, this mystery expands without time and without space. Ordinary experience is the death of that incommunicable mystery. To be in contact with that, the mind, the whole of you, must be at the same level, at the same time, with the same intensity as that which is called mysterious. And this is love. And with this, the whole mystery of the world is open. So let's take a few minutes of silent mystery together.